Over the past few weeks, we have been looking together at what it means to be disciples of Jesus Christ. And we started by looking at some of the Lord's last words before he ascended back into heaven. This is what is known as the Great Commission. And we learned that our responsibility as disciples is to go out into the world and to make more disciples. And we found that we do that by baptizing them and by teaching them. We looked at the word disciple. We learned that it means to be a learner. That is the root of that word. And so we're going out into the world making people learners of Jesus or students of Jesus or followers of Jesus. And we learned that the word disciple is found more than 260 times in the New Testament. So it's a significant word that's used very often to describe the Lord's people under the New Covenant. I think the word Christian is only used maybe three, possibly four times. So disciple is far more common than Christian even. But before we go making disciples, we need to know exactly what a disciple is. We need to know how to be good disciples ourselves, and we also need to know what we're getting people into and what we're trying to convince them of in this good news that we're sharing. And so over a period of several weeks, we are looking at five passages in the New Testament, five major passages where this word is used, and we're doing the best we can to look through these five passages in chronological order. So as they were spoken by Jesus, we're working through in that particular order. We started a few weeks ago with the passage in Matthew chapter 10 where Jesus explains that when we as his disciples submit to his will and when we imitate his way of life and his manner of teaching, we will be persecuted. So that's a guarantee, and we need to prepare for this. We need to be aware of it and need to be prepared for at least some level of opposition. The next week, we looked at two verses from John chapter 8, and we learned that true disciples will continue in Jesus' word, that we will abide in his word, some translations say, and that will lead to freedom from sin. It's very important we don't go beyond the scriptures, but we keep our lives in the scripture. We base everything that we teach and do here at this congregation and as individuals using the word of God as our guide or as our manual. So that's the importance of staying in or continuing in or abiding in the word. And then last week, if you were here, you may remember we looked at that passage in Luke chapter 14 where Jesus warns this huge crowd of potential disciples that they must first count the cost. And again, something I learned last week that I'd never really thought about before was that Jesus was completely unconcerned with large numbers. That's not why he's here. I mean, obviously we want more to be saved than fewer, but he didn't live for the crowds. He wanted to tell them the truth, and what they did with that was then up to them. He did not soften the message because of the large groups. And so some of his most severe statements, in fact, are made in front of large groups of people as if he's thinning them out. So he uses a number of word pictures in that passage to emphasize how important it is to go into this decision well-informed. As disciples, he must always come first, even above our own families. We learned that we must take up our cross and follow him. This is a one-way trip. Like the builder, we have to stick with it through the end. And like the warrior king who's outnumbered, we are to surrender everything to him. And then like salt, we have to remain pure. Otherwise, we become worthless and are not worthy of being his disciples. So these are things we need to understand before we get into that, before we become his disciples. This morning, we continue with a fourth very important passage on discipleship, and I'm talking about two verses in the book of John chapter 13. So I want to invite you to turn with me to John chapter 13. We'll be looking at verses 34 and 35. This is on page 1684 in our pew Bibles. So I hope you can join me there, and we'll look at two verses and keep our Bibles open as we study. But in John chapter 13, we come to the night before Jesus' crucifixion. He and his disciples, the 12 apostles, are in the upper room. They, of course, have the Passover meal together. He establishes what we know as the Lord's Supper. He's washed the apostles' feet by this point earlier in chapter 13. And by the time we get to verses 34 and 35, Judas has just walked out of the room. Judas just left in order to go make the deal to betray Jesus later that evening for 30 pieces of silver. And so we are right near the end, and right near the end of his life, Jesus gives a command. And it is the most important of all commands. It has been described as the greatest commandment. This is the one thing that Jesus desperately wants his followers to understand. So let's look together then at John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Just a few words we're dealing with here, but such an incredibly deep message. I hope we can spend the next 20 minutes or so looking at this just to give us a preview of where we're going with this passage today. I want us to notice the command itself. Then I want us to think about what it is that makes this a new commandment as opposed to being an old commandment. And then I want us to close by noticing what Jesus really expects to happen when we live this as he has commanded. But first, let's notice the command itself. And the command is that we are to love one another. And if we look at the context, if we look at what is happening here, it seems that it all boils down to this. As I alluded to earlier, this is it. He's right near the end of his earthly ministry. And so out of everything that Jesus has said over the past 3.5 years, this is perhaps the most important. This is what he wants to stick with these men. And so there's so much we could say, but probably we need to start just by defining what love actually is. There are a number of words that are translated from the Greek language into English as love. But as I understand it, the word that Jesus uses here refers to the idea of considering the needs of others ahead of our own. Doing whatever it is that needs to be done, whatever this other person needs, even if it requires some level of sacrifice on our part. So we're talking about a self-sacrificing kind of love, doing whatever the other person needs us to do. And this leads to a very closely related observation, I believe, and that is this love has actually been commanded. This isn't just a suggestion. This isn't just a good idea or something that we should probably think about doing. But this is a command from Jesus himself. And I don't know whether you notice this yet or not, but as I see these two verses, it looks like this command is repeated 3 times in only 2 verses, at least in slightly different ways, but 3 times in 2 verses we're told to love one another. This command is repeated 16 times throughout the New Testament. And there's a reason for this being a command instead of just something we should probably think about. Often we think of love as being an emotion. That's the way we in our culture today often think of love. Love is something that we fall into. Love is a good feeling that we may have toward another person. And that may be a part of this from time to time, but not always. And I believe that's why Jesus has to command it. If it were always fun, Jesus would not have had to tell us to do this. I'm thinking about this over this past week, and I suddenly realized nobody has to order me to eat a brownie. Nobody has to tell me to eat bacon. Nobody has to command me to go to UW Swap every Friday morning. You know, those are things that I love doing. I do those things voluntarily. Those things are fun. I enjoy doing those things. Nobody commands those things. But the kind of love Jesus talks about here sometimes does need to be commanded. He has to tell us to do this. And the reason is sometimes the kind of love that we're talking about in this passage is amazingly difficult. The kind of love we're talking about here is a sacrifice. It's not something that we'll always enjoy doing. It's not a fun thing. To love in this way, we might actually need to set aside feelings. We may need to have one feeling that we have to overcome in order to love in this way. We might need to do something uncomfortable. We might need to do something that we don't enjoy doing. We might need to express this kind of love to somebody we don't even like. There is a difference between liking and loving someone. By the way, this can happen in a marriage sometimes, doesn't it? I might need to do something that I don't really like to do simply because I made a promise to love this other person. And that's the self-sacrificing kind of love that we're talking about here. It's not primarily a feeling. It's doing what needs to be done in a self-sacrificing kind of way. But the point here is, the love Jesus commands here is commanded. It's not a feeling towards somebody. It's an action towards somebody. And in this context, love is doing what somebody else needs to have done when they are perhaps completely unable to do it for themselves or pay us back. So what's true in a relationship like marriage might also be true with our brothers and sisters in the Lord. Those of us sitting together right here in this room. I might need to love you even when I'm annoyed with you. And the same goes from you toward me. We don't always like each other in the church, but we need to love each other. We need to overcome feelings sometimes of annoyance or whatever in order to do what we need to do. So the idea here at the beginning is love is commanded. I would make another observation here, and that is love is practical. When we think about the command to love one another, it is an action and it is practical. And we think about what was read earlier in our scripture reading, 1 John 3, in verses 17 and 18. But whoever has the world's goods, so if you have the stuff, if you have cash or food or clothing or whatever it is, whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and in truth. So just a practical thing here at the beginning, love means that we do something. So love is practical. Love is sending a box of cookies to a college student. Love is letting somebody at church have your car for 3 weeks while theirs is in the shop. Love is dropping off a pan of lasagna after surgery. Love is cleaning somebody's bathroom while they're in the hospital before they get home. By the way, this reminds me of something that stays on my mind whenever we discuss love, and I know I've mentioned it before, but when we first moved to Janesville, the church there had been without a preacher for like 3.5 years, and things were a little bit chaotic and disorganized, to say the least. The baptistry hadn't been cleaned in that time, which was absolutely disgusting. My first baptism was like a hazmat situation down there. But after a few months, I'd been there, and the building was absolutely disgusting. And we came together, and we was like, we got to take turns or something. This building, we need to do something. You know, it's a group of like 20 people, and we need to step up and have a sign-up sheet or something. And I remember somebody spoke up in the meeting, and she said, but I don't like cleaning toilets. I remember thinking, is there anybody who enjoys cleaning a toilet? You know, and so I think we had to step it up as a congregation, and for the sake of our visitors and for the sake of all of us, you know, we just had to put a sheet up, and we ended up all signing up, and we got it done. But there's an example of a practical thing that needed to be done. It was not a pleasant thing to do, but it had to be done. Love is washing a sink full of dishes when everybody in the family has the flu. Love is personally covering an electric bill when a fellow Christian is looking for work. Love is stopping by to chop ice off of a driveway at 4 a.m. before a grieving family gets up to go to work the day after the funeral. Love is taking time to affirm a relationship with a brother or sister, even when we really don't have the time to do it. Love is showing up at a funeral, at a ball game, at the hospital, at the airport. Love is mailing a card, making a call, sending a message. Love is practical. But these things aren't just going to fall on us. There's not going to be a voice from heaven that says, you need to send a card today. You need to clean somebody's toilet today. That voice will never happen. These are things that we actually need to go out and look for, opportunities that need to be searched out. And again, this is a commandment. We can't wait for these to drop onto us. We don't just assume that somebody else will take care of some issue. We don't just think about ourselves, but this kind of love we're talking about here means that we actively go out looking for ways to serve, looking for ways to love each other in the church, for ways to do whatever it is that needs to be done. And again, I would point out before we move on from the command part of this, that the people who need our love right now in this sense are right here in this room. We need to love one another. Isn't that what Jesus says? He's speaking to disciples, and he's saying to these men, these 11 men, since Judas had left, to these 11 men, you need to look out for ways to love each other. Yeah, we got to love our neighbors, right? That's in the Bible. We've got to love our enemies. That's a hard thing to do. That's in the Bible. But we also need to love each other. And this is a self-sacrificing, doing whatever it takes kind of love. So this is the first thing we learn in this command. As we go back to the text, there is another significant part of this, and it comes with Jesus' statement that this is a new commandment. And so we kind of need to ask ourselves, what is it that makes this command new? After all, the command to love goes all the way back to the law of Moses. In fact, at one point in Matthew 22:36, a lawyer had challenged Jesus, asking him, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus responds and says to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the greatest and foremost commandment." And then Jesus continues by saying that the second is like it. "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." That's a direct quote from Leviticus 19:18. And so the command to love was not actually new at all. So what then did Jesus mean when he says that he was giving his disciples a new commandment? It seems that we have the answer when we go back and look again at what he actually says in verse 34. "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another." And so it seems then that the new part of this is the standard. It's the example, the bar that is set, the example that's given. The new part of this is that we are to love each other just as Jesus has loved us. And that's what brings it to a new level. In other words, we are to love each other more than we love ourselves. You know, the idea of loving your neighbor as you love yourself, this is loving each other more than we love ourselves, more than we even love our own lives. It is a self-sacrificing kind of love. So we're to love each other just as Jesus loved us. And this is new. Never before had the Son of God come into the world to offer himself as a sacrifice for all people, even for his enemies, even for a betrayer like Judas, who left the room just minutes before this statement was made. This commandment is new in Jesus. Decades later, the Apostle John would write again, thinking back to this night. It had an impression, made an impact on him. And he would go on to explain in 1 John 2:7-8, "Beloved, I'm not writing a new commandment to you, but an old commandment which you have had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which you've heard. On the other hand, I am writing a new commandment to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining." So that command to love was an old commandment, but it was new in Jesus. Jesus gave it a new significance, and so there was a new urgency to it. In Jesus, the old command had a fresh application to it, because in Jesus, we see this commandment demonstrated in a way that we've never seen before. And so loving not just as we love ourselves, but loving even more than we love ourselves. Notice Jesus demonstrates this over and over again, including just a few verses earlier in this chapter. If you look at the opening big paragraph in John chapter 13, you'll notice Jesus washing the apostles' feet, including the feet of Judas, who was, again, about to leave the room to go betray him. So here they are when we put this in chronological order. The disciples, they're arguing about who's the greatest. And as they're arguing, Jesus picks up a towel and he wraps it around his waist. He pours some water into a basin and he starts washing the disciples' feet. He has other things that he's thinking about. He knows what's about to happen later that night into the next morning and so on. And yet, even in that situation, he ignores his own concerns and he demonstrates that love, it's not about who's most important, but love is doing whatever needs to be done with no real regard for our own needs or feelings. Real love sacrifices, as he will go on to do the very next day. Later that night, in fact, Jesus speaks of love again over in John 15, verses 12 and 13, where he says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends." That's exactly what he was about to do within the next few hours. So he did for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. He did it at great personal expense, great pain on his part. He did it before we could ask for it. We didn't ask for him to die on the cross. He did this knowing this is what we need, even before we had a chance to beg for it. But he saw a need and he filled it. In the same way, we also look for ways to do good. We don't wait to be asked, but we step out in faith, we look for opportunities, we do what needs to be done. It's not about us, it's not really even about the person that we're helping, isn't it? It's about Jesus. He set the example. So it's not about feelings toward one person or another, but as his disciples, he's called us to love each other just as he loved us. So also we ought to love one another. So we come to the end of this passage, we notice why these two verses are included in this series on discipleship. As we find that when we love like Jesus, we prove to the world around us that we are, in fact, disciples of Jesus Christ. Our love proves who we are. Our love proves our discipleship. And for the most part, the world around us, they don't really see what happens in this building, do they? I mean, this is a public gathering. Anybody's invited to come into this room. This is not a top secret thing that's going on here. But for the most part, the people in the world, they're not going to notice what we do in here. They don't see us leading prayers. They don't see us singing songs together. You know, they don't see the family writing a check and putting it in the basket. Those are not really things that the world around us is going to notice. But they do see us loving each other. And they see us doing good things, not just for us, but for people in the community. They see us bringing snacks or whatever for the local schools and Schultz Lewis and, you know, the clothing and that kind of thing. They see us being Jesus to the world around us. When we love each other, that love proves to the world that we are who we say we are. Not that we need to go out there and brag about everything we're doing. But on the other hand, the things that we do are not secret. You know, we're not doing these things behind the scenes so that nobody will ever know. That's not the point either. We need to look at our heart, make sure our hearts are right. But the things that we are due for each other in terms of love and sacrifice, those things have a way of being seen. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus compares our good works to a city set on a hill. Remember that passage? We're like a light that's put out there for everybody to see, that kind of thing. And so I take that as saying that we have the Lord's permission to be obvious. You know, not that we're bragging about it, but this isn't done in a corner. And so we have his permission to do things for one another, to teach by example, and to let the light shine. This is something that all of us can do also. I don't want to miss that this morning. You don't have to have a lot of money to do what's being talked about here. You don't have to have an extensive education. So it's not about that. Everybody has the ability to love, to do something that you're good at for another person, whether that's, you know, fixing a snowblower or, you know, getting somebody's roof leak patched or, you know, whatever it is. That may not involve a large amount of cash, but it takes some time. And it takes me noticing something in order to get that thing done. It's not about winning arguments. That's not how the world is going to know that we are from God, that we're true disciples. This is about being Jesus and doing what he would have us to do, doing like he did. Caring, loving, helping, forgiving. We know actions speak louder than words, and the world will notice. The members of our own families, the co-workers, classmates, friends, and neighbors have a way of figuring that out. And what's amazing to me is this is exactly what the early Christians did. It's almost as if word got out, and they were listening. The disciples got this word spread. You know, they had very limited resources, but they took care of each other, and the world noticed. I'm thinking in time sequence, just a few weeks after this, you may remember how Peter preached on the day of Pentecost. 3,000 people were baptized, and right after that, the Bible tells us that all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. And they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all as anyone might have need. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people, and the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. The early church got the word out. They cared for each other, and the world noticed that. That love was obvious, and it made a difference. Their love for each other proved that they were really disciples of Jesus Christ. Just as a cop has a badge, just as an employee might have an ID card, you know, the love that we share for each other is the proof. It's the badge. It's the demonstration of who we really are. As we close, I want us to just go back again very briefly to the Great Commission, the last words spoken by Jesus after his resurrection before he ascended back into heaven. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, or behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. As we close today, I want us to focus in on Jesus' command to teach these new disciples to observe everything that he has commanded. This morning, we have looked at the greatest of all of the commandments, the command to love one another. And so as we teach by doing. We demonstrate, we show the people around us what Christian living is all about. We sometimes sing, they'll know we're Christians by our love. I think that was one of ours this morning. And today we're looking for ways to love. We're looking for ways to be Jesus to the world around us. We make disciples by baptizing and by teaching. And what we're talking here is teaching. We're teaching the command that he gave to us. Just a week or so ago, I mentioned the new church directory online. Many of you have access to that. If you don't, get in touch with me or with Silas Morris, and we'll get you connected or get one printed out for you. Our old directory really isn't that old. It was just printed back in August. So that applies to the print. If you've got that, great, but online is even better, even more up to date. But what if we use that directory not only as a guide for prayer, but what if we also used it as a way to do what Jesus is telling us to do here? I know some of you pray through the bulletin. You take the bulletin, you look at the prayer list, and you pray through that for each person on a daily basis. Some of you pray through the directory as well, praying for each member of the congregation. But I'm wondering, after what we've studied this morning, what if we love our way through the church directory? You know, what if we go through there regularly, name by name, looking for ways to get to know each other? What if we get to a name? I don't know who that is. I can kind of fix that, can't I? You know, I can make a phone call or send an email or stop by or connect on a Sunday morning, and I can look for ways to serve, looking for ways to love each other just as He's loved us, sacrificially. Not looking out for our own interests, but looking out for the interest of others. If you have other Christians in your family, what if we do this together? Sitting down as a family around the dinner table and thinking, you know, who are the members of the congregation? What can we around our table do to help and to get to know each other and so on? I'm hoping we can take His words to heart here, that we'll obey what He's telling us to do, that we'll be examples to the world around us, proving that we are His disciples. If you're thinking about becoming a disciple, we want to invite you to make that decision this morning. If you have any questions, talk to me or one of the other elders, any member of this congregation. We'd be glad to do the best we can to try to answer those, take you to the scriptures, and look at those together. So get in touch at any time. If you know that in response to His death, burial, and resurrection, He demands that we turn away from sin, that we allow ourselves to be buried with Him in baptism. If you understand that, if you're ready to make that decision, if you've counted the cost, or if we can help you in some other way, if we can serve you in some way, if we can love you in some way, we hope that you'll let us know. You can come and talk to me now as we stand and sing this next song. Let's all stand and sing together.